Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the planning meeting. Are there any apologies?
Chair, apologies from Councillor Beattie, Councillor Coventry and Councillor Wallace.
Order of business?
Is as printed in the agenda, Chair.
Are there any declarations of interest? Item 4, minutes of the last meeting, 14th of January. Can somebody propose these?
Move the correct record, Chair.
Want to say anything? No. Major applications currently being assessed, and other developments at pre-application consultation stage, report by the Head of Communities and Economy.
Chairman, this is just the regular update report with regard to major applications. It's for noting, but obviously I'll take any questions if there are any.
Move on to item 6, appeals and local review body decisions.
Again, Chairman, it's the regular update for noting, unless there's any questions, which I'll happily take.
Item 7 then, application for planning permission considered for the first time, report by Head of Communities and Economy.
Thank you, Chairman. This is an application for the change of use of a vacant retail unit to a hot food takeaway and for the erection of a ventilation system at 24 High Street in Pennycook. The application site is a former butcher's shop but has been vacant since September 2009. The unit is positioned between a retail unit and a staircase which leads to a restaurant above. To the other side of the staircase sits a former bank site which has been used as the Energy Trust Advice Centre. A residential flat is at first floor level above this unit. The application site is within the Pennycook Town Centre, where there is a presumption in favour of appropriate retail, food and drink and other commercial uses compatible to a town centre location. A concern over the loss of a retail unit and the possibility of over-provision of eateries within the Pennycook Town Centre is outweighed by the benefits of bringing a long-term vacant unit back into use and therefore contributing to the viability of the town centre. The separation distance between the flat above the Energy Trust Advice Centre and the proposed use, and the fact that there is already a restaurant with ancillary hot food takeaway adjoining the residential unit, means that there is unlikely to be any significant detrimental increase on the impact on the amenity of the occupiers of the flatted dwelling. There have been 3 letters of representation, including a petition with 22 signatures and a letter from the Pennycook and District Community Council objecting to the application. The proposed change of use accords with development plan policies, and as such, the recommendation is to grant planning permission subject to conditions.
Councillor Rosie.
I called in this application because I was concerned that some Pennycook organisations had not had sufficient time to give an opinion on it. Several residents and business owners within Pennycook had raised their concerns with such comments as not another takeaway. Pennycook Community Council discussed the application and were unanimous in their objection to it. The Business Improvement District Steering Group have not met to discuss this matter. The next meeting is actually on Thursday. But several business owners who are members of the BIDS steering group have raised concerns individually. A previous similar application was refused by a planning officer, and this decision was upheld by the local review board in 2010. The reasons given for refusal at that time, I think, are still relevant today. If not, in fact, I think they're probably more important now, because we have the bid steering group up and running, which is made up of Pennycook business owners, Pennycook Community Council, the Development Trust, the Council's Economic Development Manager, and myself. So it is important that we use our empty buildings, which are in prominent positions, such as this one, to attract businesses to the town centre, which will increase the footfall. If this property becomes another takeaway, I do not see it bringing more people into the town centre during the day, and it will be likely to operate in the evening. At present, we have three empty premises within the Pennycook Town Centre area that are licensed to sell food. If granted, this one would then make four. I think we're now at a level where the present food outlets are just managing. If this application is granted, we're not looking at just one extra available food outlet, we're looking at four. If this application is refused, I would encourage the applicant to engage with the Business Improvement District Steering Group and get involved on a way forward to regenerate the town centre and make it easier to get the right clients for their premises. I would move to refuse the application.
Councillor Montgomery?
I would agree with that. If you actually look at that whole town centre area, if you take it from the Royal Hotel down that side of the street and from the corner of West Street up to just below the council office, which is the town hall, there's actually 11 premises selling either takeaways or sit-down meals, or a combination of both. There's also three public houses, and it's turning into an area that I think is becoming not unmanageable, but I don't have a problem with the ones that are there and are existing. A lot of them are actually just going into premises that were already selling that type of selling hot food and takeaways. But to change a frontline shop again, which was the old butcher shop, into another hot food takeaway underneath a wing that's up above it, to me, I know over-provision is not a planning issue, but I think I agree with Councillor Rosie. The fact that the bids team is actually up and operating again, I think we should be looking at trying to do a bit more proactive work with them and see what can be attracted into the town centre. I mean, that corner next to it has got the Green Energy Building, which has actually been give a facelift to the whole area. The Royal Hotel's recently been done up on the outside, and it's looking a lot better. Blue and white as well, so I mean, the colours are for the local football team. Pennycook Juniors had a great result against Avon Meadow on Saturday, by the way. But I mean, that whole corner's actually had a real lift, and the place is actually looking a lot better. And to stick another hot food takeaway in, it will only add to the town centre, it will only add to the area, and I know it's over provision, isn't it? But it's going to be selling the same stuff as at least two of the premises that are there already. And I'm quite happy to, if some councillor rules is moving, I'm quite happy to second them.
That's two people against it. Is anyone for it?
I'm not going to move for the application, because when I first read the application, I was kind of wondering why there was a recommendation as it is. And it's when you actually go through the paper and you can see on 4.4 where the planning officers seem to be taking their guidance from. And I fully now understand why the planning officers seem to be bringing in a recommendation for granting consent. Because what they've done is they've taken an application that was considered from the local review body. We are a small shop in the square in Pennycook, which I think had applied for a hot food takeaway as a supplementary to existing business, and it put the wordings in the proposed hot food takeaway benefits the town centre by bringing a vacant unit back into commercial use. This material consideration outweighs concerns with regards to the over-provision and loss of a retail unit. So you can actually see where the professional planning officer is taking his or her guidance from. The reality is that there were other distinct matters in there that were taken into consideration for that. However, it does bring to mind that there have been several applications that the local review body have allowed to go forward. on several matters, and I think it would be helpful to bring in some supplementary planning guidance if we'll have a look at that, and I think that would be helpful in overall for the planning officers to go away and have a look at the decisions taken by that, because quite frankly if the local review bodies for the right reasons I think came to that decision, the reality is if officers are then using that as more of a weight that than what the local development planner, then we'll have to be really careful here and bring in reasonable guidance for officers to allow them to come forward with the proper recommendations.
Nobody else? Bob?
Thanks, Chair. I was on the LRB at that one, and initial reading of the report, I was sort of minded to grant, but hearing the arguments of the local members, I think, and the general discussion, I think quite right to reject this application.
Move on to item 7B. Okay, the application for the Hotford takeaway is refused.
Chair, and the whole thing referred to the bids team, because that's looking at the whole of the town centre anyway, which I think is the reason for doing that as well.
Thank you. Right, item 7B. Application for planning permission for the erection of a wind turbine east of Lonestone Crossing. This has been called in by Councillor Pottinger, but I'll get him to speak in a moment.
Thank you, Chairman. This is an application for the erection of a single wind turbine, an associated meter house, and formation of access track on land to the east of Lonestone Crossing, Pommythorne Farm, Pennycook. The proposed turbine is 35.2 metres high to the tip of the blade in an upright position. The tower is 24.7 metres high and the rotary blade sweep is 21 metres. The metre house building will have a render finish and have a footprint of 2.5 by 2.4 metres and will be 2.6 metres high. Planning permission was granted in September 2013 for a single turbine of a height of 33.2 metres. The applicant now wishes to erect a different model of turbine, which is 2 metres taller than the one approved. National and local planning policy sets a presumption in favour of renewable energy developments which do not have a demonstrable detrimental impact on the landscape and residential amenity. The assessment of the application concludes that the turbine can be accommodated in the landscape and will not have a detrimental impact on residential amenity. The Council's landscape capacity study for wind turbine developments provides guidance in support of development plan policies to assist in the assessment of turbine proposals. The study, which has been attested on appeal, supports limited wind turbine developments within some areas of Midlothian. The site is within an area where small-scale turbines can be accommodated in the landscape. The proposal is of a scale which falls within this category. The proposed turbine will be sited at a distance of 370 metres from the nearest residential property. This is of sufficient distance to mitigate any impact on residential amenity in terms of noise and shadow flicker. There have been 64 letters of representation and a letter from the Howgate Community Council objecting to the application. There has also been one letter of representation supporting the application. The proposed turbine accords a development plan policy, and as such, the recommendation is to grant planning permission subject to conditions.
Brian, do you want to speak?
Yes, and I'll try and keep it brief. There's been a lot of history with this particular site. In the last year, I've been communicated a lot of different points on this, and I've had a lot of discussions with the planning officers on it. I'm not interested in the precedents. I'm not interested in the commercial or the access to feed-in tariffs. I'm just basically want to hear this one heard on its own merits. The Now, this amendment, the first application was for 45 metres and a different nearby site. That was withdrawn. That took up a lot of the early stage kind of discussions. And then, obviously, when it was withdrawn, I believed that it was gone as such. Then an application came, and it was 2 metres less, as you say, and it was dealt under delegated powers. A lot of the information on that one wasn't available for me at the time when we're actually dealing with this application on delegated powers. That information that was subsequently changed on the website and subsequently relayed to me from planning officers about the reasons why it was changed and why it had to be changed. And obviously there's been campaigning organisations and others that have been feeding into this application as well. It's no speaking for any campaigning organisation. I'm neither pro or anti wind turbines as such. You know, every application should be done on its merits, and I think that's right. And I think that's right that this one should be dealt with by the committee on its merits. But I've had that many questions, even in the report, that I thought it was right, you know, to question it. I think there's some kind of contradictions in the report. And obviously, if a wind turbine is to be erected and approved, it will provide a significant source of renewable energy. Now, I do see this as a significant source, and I've been quoted figures, the percentage that could actually go to the national grid on this one, and I'm just wondering if this is significant and within our current guidelines and policies. What justification is there for the actual capacity figures? The average wind speeds, etc. I'm looking for maybe a bit more information on that. Scottish guidelines talk about 2 kilometres from residences, you know, and obviously this is a lot less than that. And the Midlothian local plan, in particular the landscape capacity study you've referred to, looking at policies NRG1 and NRG2. And Energy 1 subsections A and C in particular, are giving me different messages on whether to support this or not. A blot in the landscape, well, I think that is a bit subjective. People would have different opinions on it. A turbine actually turning is maybe more a blot on a landscape than a large piling, which is not moving. I suppose it all depends on how many times you see it, you know, actually turning, and that could deal with the proximity you're to it, proximity you're actually driving past it, or the vision, which I see your posters on the wall there talk about from the Pentland parks, which in the hills have many walkers on them, and they'll have their own opinion on whether that is a blot in the landscape or not. But whether this is a 7.9 on page 28, a sustainable development, you make references to the fact that the current turbine is no available. This is why they want to purchase another one. I mean, I see this obviously just purely commercial reasons to get this other one up in place before the feed-in tariffs are being cut in April 2014. Well, I don't know what they're being cut to, you know, or I don't know if that's definitely being cut. I was looking for more information on that, or are they actually are they being significantly cut, or are they being reduced altogether? I don't know for that, but I can see in 3.4, you're talking about this project needs the viability of the feed-in tariffs to survive. Yet further on in the report, on 8.26 in the report, you say feed-in tariffs are not a planning concern, and I think that would be right, you know, because we can't work to an agenda where somebody's saying I need to get this up quick because I might lose some grant money out of this. You know, I think planning has to be more responsible than that and has to deal with everything on its own merits and that agenda. There's been various community objections to this. Highgate Community Council, obviously, there's various questions about the actual distances, because the distance at 370 metres, you know, I'm querying if that is the actual distance, or is that as a crow flies kind of distance from the Lonestone Cottage, because I'm looking at the maps and I'm finding it a wee bit difficult to read that within the actual papers. And somebody's actually told me that the distance is a good bit less than that, at 343 metres. I don't know the exact distance, but I think that all these things should be taken into consideration, and maybe I should get some of those points answered before we move on to discuss whether this is a sustainable, viable, an appropriate application at this time, or is it just purely driven by the need to get in quick? And if it was the need to get in quick, I keep thinking it maybe should have been a separate application. You know, to be fair, you know, it's a different agenda, it's a different size of turbine, you know, and rather than just an amendment on top of an amendment which was on top of a withdrawn, you know, application. Different sites, right enough, nearby, but obviously significantly different in heights and significantly different in actually the location from the very first application on this. So I'd like to wonder if I get more of my points answered on this questions I've just raised. Thanks.
Thank you. Peter, paragraph 3.4 about the tariffs, number one. Yep, I'll give you the three questions at once, okay? Paragraph 8.2, it mentions the 370 metres, and I think Brian mentioned 2 kilometres, and 8.21, where the average 7 metres per second wind speed is mentioned.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. If I just work through some of those questions, then the first one, if we look at the issue about the tariffs, it's correct to say that's not a material planning consideration. Reference to it in paragraph 3.4 is explaining the background and the rationale behind why the applicant applied. So in terms of assessing the planning application, we've looked purely at the planning issues, how it fits into the landscape, whether the turbine has an impact on residential amenity. We're not giving weight or penalising the applicant regarding the issues about tariffs. My understanding, and this is not a planning consideration, my understanding is that the tariff system is changing in April of this year. So the arrangement at present is that someone erects a turbine, they can be guaranteed a certain price for the energy generated, and those tariffs are likely to reduce after April. So there may be a financial incentive, but that is not a material planning consideration with regard to this application and wasn't treated as such. In terms of some of the distances, the Scottish Government advice or guidance is that they recommend under the current Scottish planning policy document a separation distance of 2 kilometres from a wind farm. That's not from an individual turbine of this scale, that's from a wind farm, multiple turbines, commercial ones, which are often 100 metres plus. The current draft Scottish planning policy document actually increases that to 2.5 kilometres. But again, from our consideration, that's not relevant to this because it's an individual turbine, which is considered to be a small turbine. Although it's 35 metres, which is a significant height, in terms of wind farm or wind turbine development, that's quite small. In terms of the smaller scale distances, the turbine is 370 metres from the nearest property. I recognise that I think you made reference to someone saying it was maybe 340 metres away, but there's obviously a difference of opinion there. What I would say, however, though, is what's important here is the relationship between the turbines and the nearest residential dwellings, and that's because turbines do make a sort of low-level noise, and there is this issue about shadow flicker. But once you get beyond 300 metres, there is no detrimental impact in terms of noise because the level drops below the localised noises and the traffic. And so although I would say it's 370, if someone's disputing that and saying it's 340, that's still in a distance which is acceptable. In terms of some of the energy output components of it, and Councillor, you made reference to the words whether it was significant or not. we're using the phrase in terms of locally. I'm not talking about on a national grid scale. I'm talking about locally. I mean, there is reference to it producing the sort of energy that could accommodate 40, 50 houses. So that is, I would say, locally, that's a significant amount of power. But obviously on a national scale, it's not. Maybe we should have just left out that phrase significant and just spoke about the actual volumes. In terms of the energy generated, it's worked out based on a nationally agreed calculation, which is based on an understanding that there is variable wind speeds. You know, the turbine's not fully operational all the time, so that's averaged out, and that's how we come up with the actual numbers, but that's based on a sort of national standard. I think that's covered it, but if there's anything else, I'll...
Just thanks for letting me in again, Chair, but the point is it significant if it's 0.0008%? Is that a significant contribution to a turbine? On 0.7.14 in the papers here, it talks about in the middle of that paragraph, small-scale turbine wind farm development up to 5 turbines at 15 to 30 metres high. Obviously, this is above 30 metres high, and it's less than 5 turbines. But should that read between 2 and 5 turbines? Because earlier, somewhere else in the paper, it talks about a single turbine being allowed to be at different sizes. And is that an anomaly in the papers at section 7.14? And finally, on 820, you talk about the noise impacts. It quotes there a wind farm it's a wind farm at about 350 metres, you know. And obviously, we're saying that this is a single turbine, so it's not the same effect as a wind farm at that kind of distance, yeah?
Chairman, in terms of the paragraph 8.2, this is just me trying to clarify or give some sort of benchmark, because it's sometimes difficult for us to talk about noise in decimal without it giving some sort of context. So that's us trying to explain or trying to reassure that because of the separation distance, it's acceptable. But the 350 metres is the figure that's quoted in the advice in terms of giving it a particular reference point. So it wasn't us trying to sort of confuse over the numbers. It was us just picking an example from the planning circular. Going back to the other issue about paragraph 7.14, that's from the landscape capacity study, which talks about different scales of development in terms of wind turbines, ranging from low level below the 30 metres, but a group of them compared to individual turbines or clusters of more larger turbines. And again, the Landcape Capacity Study looks at Midlothian and identifies areas where certain forms of development would be okay. And in this area, it's covered by the area which is could accommodate groupings up to 5 of small turbines, 15 to 30 metres, or some at the lower level of 30 plus metres. So this is an individual turbine, so it fits into those categories. So it's acceptable.
Councillor Emery.
Yeah, Chairman, I mean, it seems to me that what we're here today to discuss is an amendment to an already given planning permission of 2 metres. And I'm guessing that the planning officer assessed a 2-metre increase in the wind turbine. And to be perfectly honest, everything else that goes before that has already been assessed. And I just think, you know, what the planning committee are now being asked to do by the call-in is to decide whether the planning officer was correct in assessing that another 2 metres was going to make little or no difference, given that there is a planning permission existing for a wind turbine in the first place. It's not about location. It's not about disturbance, it's not about anything else. It meets with the criteria. The one thing that the planning officer had to do was look at the landscape capacity study and see if an increase of 2 metres fitted within the policy that went through in 2007. And what it says quite clearly here is a single turbine can be erected if in the right place, which will fall into the category of 30 to 65 metres high. This one is 35.2, and therefore the planning officer, from what I can foresee and what the paperwork in front of us, has assessed this application or the amendment to the application on that. And it just seems to me that everything else that's been talked about has gone before. And that's what we've got to decide. We either decide whether it can be increased by 2 metres or not. But it's not a new application in the sense that it's already got planning permission. If it had been a new application, I think there's a different debate that may have been held in this chamber. But the question for the whole planning committee is whether it accepts 2 metres or not. And I just wanted to say that because we can then get caught up in getting involved in something that has already been assessed, been agreed under delegated powers, and in actual fact there's a planning permission existing for this wind turbine. It's now wanted to be replaced and amended by 2 metres. Thank you.
As always, Councillor Emery put things in very lucid terms, but it's not just 2 metres. There are quite a lot of mistakes made by the planners. 370 is not 370, it's 343, and that's a lot more than 2 metres. I also look at a paper that was written by Dr. Hobbs and sent to all of us, which really was very enlightening. I also understand that there is a photo montage that is quite different to what the planners originally sent by the developer. And I feel they took an enormous risk by going back to us and asking for an extension, because it allowed us to really look at this in a clear light and in the light of the fact that there have been quite a number of objectors and a lot of additional information has come forward. So I would like to add to the very sound comments of Councillor Emery.
Thank you. Peter, would you like to comment on Councillor Emery's statement?
Just to confirm what Councillor Emery said was correct. Planning permission has already been granted for a turbine at 33.2 metres. This is an amended turbine which adds an extra 2 metres to it.
Okay, Jim.
Can I just clarify something? I mean, I actually have some concerns with what Russell says. This isn't an amended application. It's a new application. Is that not correct? You know, it's not a case that whatever's been decided before has been decided and set into tablets of stone. This is a new application for this wind turbine.
Chair, just to be clear, it is a new application. The previous application was there, and clearly the applicants are unable to implement that for reasons they've explained. This is a new application. In the context of looking at the application, therefore, you can look at it completely on its merits and all of the factors which relate to it. Relevant to that consideration is the history, and where there is an extant planning consent, then that is relevant as part of your considerations. But you're still obviously free to make whatever decision you consider on this existing application that's coming before you.
Councillor Devink?
Yeah. Would it be possible for us to be really put in the picture? Because I understand that the photo montage that was given by the planners, by the developers to the planners, is really not at all the correct photo montage. And we have a new one, which is really showing that this is a very intruding thing. And I feel that this is something that drives, you know, makes us all look foolish.
Peter?
Chairman, on the wall behind the members, there's a number of photomontages. One from the applicant on the bottom, that's the showing the scheme that was approved, and then the difference, which is the one proposed. The photomontage above is from the objectors, so that you've got both sides of the argument, both the applicant and the objectors. So they're up on the wall to see. I would make comment in my view that they show the similarity in the turbine insofar as the 2 meters difference between the approved scheme and the proposed scheme are not significant in terms of its impact on the landscape, but they're both there on the wall.
But is that the one that you got this morning?
The top one is, Chairman.
Okay.
Chair, can I pass these around just so the members can see at their desk?
Yeah.
On the previous application, I never called it in because I wasn't aware of all the facts. You know, facts have subsequently changed. So the previous application wasn't called in. When the website was even changed on the 30th of September, there was more information coming forward about the distances and etc., which was really originally, which I'd call an erroneous report. So this is dealt with as a fresh application, and I've just had that confirmed as a fresh application. But when I make references to the history, I just want it to be known that I didn't have all the information in the past to call the previous one in.
Jim, Councillor Montgomery was just before you.
One thing that's not been asked, and I think it is an issue in terms of this, where does this set as a precedent for any other applications that are coming in? Because I know that's an issue that's been raised with myself. I don't know if it does or not, but obviously if this was granted or refused, it will have an influence on, maybe it doesn't set a precedent, but it will have an influence on any other applications, I would have thought.
Throw some cliches at you, I'm afraid, is that it is each case on its merits. But what happens if just for argument's sake, you decide to grant planning permission for this turbine, it gets put up, any future applications, you do treat what's already happened as a material consideration. So that could either suggest, the council are supportive of this type of development, or the other side of that argument is that eventually you get maybe a cluster that the groupings component is now unacceptable. You've maybe saturated that local environment with turbines. So it does become a consideration, but it doesn't automatically follow that because you grant or refuse permission on this application, you automatically follow that for subsequent applications because you take in consideration.
Sorry, can I come back on that? I understand that each one on its own, but if a developer was coming in and we actually did agree to this one, the developer would use that as an argument that, you have already agreed a previous application, in respect to a larger one, say, coming in at a later stage. Would that, a developer could argue that, I suppose.
Yeah, he could argue that, yeah.
Yeah.
I did think I had this quite clear in my head in terms of the recommendations for the officers with regards to the size and appropriateness of the size of the turbine, and listening to Peter's comments earlier when he talked about the size of it as a single turbine falling within the lower end, I now see there's a contradiction in the paper here though. On page 29.714, that first paragraph there which Peter referred to talks about the turbine topology with regards to the classification of turbines presented in the landscape capacity study. The proposed turbine, 35.2 metres, falls within the lower end of topology 3, which is single turbines of 30 to 65 metres. Now, I took that as, that meant that this one falls into that kind of height range. But on page 35... paragraph 8.32, it says here, whilst it is acknowledged that there are some landscape impact and that the turbine does not exceed the height limit recommended in the capacity does exceed the height limit recommended in the capacity study by 14%. So that to me contradicts what you were saying, Peter, and what is in 714. Could you comment on that, please?
Yeah, I'm sort of my understanding of the capacity study is that for this area, it says it's acceptable to have typology 4, which is the lower ones, 15 to 13 metres, or those at the lower end of typology 3, which is the scale that we're talking about. That's my understanding of the landscape capacity study, and that is referred to in the report, which we're desperately trying to find. So in terms of going back to paragraph 8.32, to be honest, Chairman, I think there's maybe just an error on my part then, that there's that inconsistency. I know later on in the report, it's because the landscape capacity study doesn't map out precise criteria for every field in every area. It's sort of blanket areas and general recommendations. So, to be honest, I've got no explanation for that. It's just that I must be in an error in terms of error 8.32.
Just for clarity, Peter, could you just explain that again?
What I'm saying, Chair, is that if we go back to paragraph 7.14, that sets out three different categories of turbine. The landscape capacity study for this area supports turbines in category 4, which is small turbines, a group of small turbines, 15 to 30 metres, but also those turbines at the lower end of typology 3, which is the 30 to 65 metres, the individual turbines. So the landscape capacity supports that. When it goes on to the paragraph referred to by the councillor, which is paragraph 8.32, which makes reference to it being 14% above the 30 metres, and that's the error that, to be honest, I think is an error. I've got no sort of answer to that, to be honest with you. I suppose that all I'm saying is that its impact in the landscape is acceptable. It does accord with the landscape capacity study. I just would need to go back and think about what's happened with the beginning of paragraph 8.32.
Sorry, I understand you're saying it's an error, but it's not like a typo here. Somebody has looked at this and seen and acknowledges that it's 14% higher than it should be in accordance with our policy. You know, this is not just a misspelt word. There's something here. Somebody in planning considered at some point that this was 14% higher than it should have been in comparison to policy. To be perfectly honest, Chair, I mean, I feel actually fairly comfortable about this application and going with the recommendations on the basis of, you know, the actual planning rules, not what people would like it to be, but just on the material considerations. I'm now starting to be a wee bit concerned that I'm maybe not understanding this right because of that kind of thing being in there. And that somebody is in planning is definitely under the impression that it's 14%. Bigger than it should be, yet that's not been mentioned anywhere else in the paper.
Chair, I wonder if I could try and assist the committee on this one. If you look at the category set out in 7.14, there's reference to typology 4, which is in terms of small-scale turbine wind farm development, which looks at turbines up to 30 metres high. I wonder if it's potential, I haven't done the maths, but if you look at 5.2 metres, I wonder if in fact that's a reference to the 14%. Notwithstanding whether that is the case or not in terms of how this is looked at, to some extent, coming back to the development plan, section 25 of the Act, and making decisions in accordance with the development plan, unless other material considerations indicate otherwise. The key policy, in my view, in this application is NRG 2,
of the adopted Midlothian local plan, which refers to individual wind turbines, which this is, and says that the council will support individual wind turbines and other microgeneration technologies for localised power requirements, provided they are located to minimise any potential adverse impact on the local environment, residential amenity, landscape, and or any settlement in close proximity. Now, in terms of the overall assessment of this application and taking account of the content and context of the landscape capacity study, the recommendation is that the proposal accords with NRG2, and on that basis, that's where the recommendation has come from. And those are the factors which essentially are the ones that you need to have in mind in coming to a conclusion on the application.
Owen? I was just going to make the point, the 14% seems to be a reference to the comparison to typology 4, which is the 30%, as opposed to the typology 3.
Chairman, sorry if I could. The paragraph I was scrambling for just now was at paragraph 8.10 as well, which reached a conclusion in terms of the landscape capacity study, which just reaffirms what I was trying to explain, which was about compliance with typology 4 and the lower end of typology 3.
Thanks, Chair. I just find it difficult to reconcile what was said about individual wind turbines and other microgeneration technologies for localised power requirements. This one relies on it being feeding it out and getting its national subsidies from the feed-in tariffs. It doesn't sound very localised to me.
Sorry, just on that one, do we know what, or the expected output of the turbine, what percentage under sort of average conditions would the power go to the farm, to the, you know, to power that, as opposed to what's going to go to the grid? Is that something that we would know?
I don't have that breakdown. What I would say though is that the farm obviously, well, not obviously, the farm currently gets its energy supplies from the national grid, and that's where the infrastructure is. So although you, if plan permission was granted, if the turbine gets erected, it produces a certain amount of energy, which equates to the information explained in paragraph 8.227, it doesn't mean that the farm then disconnects from the local national grid and takes the energy immediately from the turbine. The energy from the turbine goes into the pot effectively, so it's just trading off what it's using for what it's contributing.
Thanks, Chair. I've seen a lot of microgenerations. My wife has a house in Orkney, and I see a lot of them up there, and these are not turbines like that at all. They are much smaller turbines which are supplying to an individual farm, and this doesn't seem to my mind to come into that category at all. Therefore, I don't think this NRG2 individual wind turbine thing applies to this one.
Right. Yeah, I quoted a figure earlier that I've not had any comment back on, 0.0008%. Right? And I've not. And my question was, is that significant? You know, and you know, where do we draw the line? You know, what is significant? What isn't significant? The other points that has not been picked up on is basically previous erroneous reports, you know, that have been on the website from the original or the first application were altered after the decision was taken under delegated powers. I've not had any feedback on that either. And then when you, it doesn't matter how much time we debate 7.14 or the other alternatives, you know, for small developments up to 5. I still read that as 1 to 5, you know. It doesn't say the word groupings, as you've mentioned in your report, groupings up to 5. It just says up to 5. So I wonder if this is maybe another misinformation, you know, or lack of proper information on this report. And again, this is this is the kind of questions I've got still to be answered, you know, before I could actually make my mind up.
Yeah, I mean, Chairman, in terms of going back to what 7.14, it's the topology 4, which is, it says up to 5 turbines. That's an application for up to 5. You're right, I'm not making a prejudgment about whether they're clustered in a very close proximity or whether they're distributed across a wider farm, because I haven't got the application. That application may vary, but in terms of the strategy, it's saying how to look at a planning application. So it depends on the application, whether it's a group clustered together or whether they're dispersed. So I'm not really in a position to answer that. I'm not really sure what to say to that, because it depends on future applications. It's helping to assess those.
And what about the 0.008? I mean, where's that sit in the scheme of things?
I'm not sure what that figure's from, Chairman. I don't know whether it's of the output for.
They're just saying the papers, I've been quoted that figure.
I'm not really sure, Chairman, where that figure is and what it's making a measure of, whether it's...
I don't think we know, Brian, and it's not in these papers, so we can't really work that one out. Ian.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to bring committee to focus on the recommendation 9.1. It was recommended that planning permission be granted for the following reason: that the development will provide a significant local renewable energy resource with minimal impact on the landscape, the environment and residential amenity. I think that's something we should focus on. The first part of it, whether it's significant or not, I understand that's to a certain extent subjective, but the fact that a smaller turbine has been given permission in the past suggests that this is more significant than one which has already been granted permission. However, I would really like to focus on the impact. As a committee member, would like to have had a site visit myself, to be honest with you, just to see what the impact would be. But the landscape capacity study, which is a study which I have criticised as being far too restrictive in the past, has recommended this go ahead and describes the area as being moorland fringes. Looking at the photo montage, there seem to be, and correct me if this is not correct, if this is maybe a misrepresentation, but I would say there are a large number of man-made objects within view. One rather tall transmitter, by the look of it, a string of telegraph poles, a good number of houses, roads, and this is often the case in many areas. I'm not, although in principle I tend to favour turbines, I'm very much against them in certain areas. Wilderness areas like the Cairngorms, for instance, the Flow Country, these places really should be kept as wilderness areas. Looking at the photo montage, this is clearly not, and therefore I am guided very much by the fact that the landscape capacity study, which as I say is very restrictive, has come down in favour of granting a small-scale development like this one. And that's the point really I would like to make to the committee, that we keep focused on the fact that permission has already been granted for something similar. What are the differences? What is the visual impact? Thank you.
I'll try and sum up here in some fashion. Paragraph 8.10, according to the landscape impact, is talking about typology 3, which is the lower scale of 30 to 60 metres. And it says that does not detract from the landscape. Well, you might argue that or not, I don't know. I don't know if anybody wants to make a proposal, Brian. I'm not quite sure if you're for or against it. Do you want to bring a motion? Ian.
I would like to move that we accept this proposal.
Yes, Peter?
I would like to move that we do not accept the proposal for the simple reason that there have been so many mistakes made and that we really ought to look into the real facts and figures properly.
Do I have a seconder for you? You second Ian, Brian?
I'm not seconding Ian, I'm seconding Councillor Peter Devine, maybe for the first time.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I'm like Councillor Baxter. I've not really any further questions to ask because, as far as I'm aware, this was debated thoroughly in September last year and planning application was granted. And the only difference I see is what's in the papers now is 2 metres in height between, is it 33.2 and 35.2, and I think that would be wouldn't have any effect on the previous decision whatsoever, and therefore I would second Ian Baxter that this application be granted.
Is anybody otherwise minded apart from these two motions? Right. The amendment first, those supporting Peter Devine's motion. And for Ian's motion. Okay.
So on the basis of that,
that brings us on to item 7C, application for planning permission in principle for the erection of 60 dwelling houses, erection of a warehouse, works at Fordall and Dalkeith.
Chairman, this is an application in principle for the erection of 60 dwelling houses, the erection of a retail warehouse building, the extension of a petrol filling station kiosk and associated works at land at Fordell, Dalkeith. The site currently comprises an existing mixed-use development including petrol filling station, shop, restaurant, equestrian agricultural supplies outlet, warehousing, garden shop, offices, caravan site and a caravan storage facility. It is proposed to retain the petrol filling station and cafe restaurant building, demolish the remaining buildings and erect a new retail warehouse building and 60 dwelling houses. The principle of extending the petrol filling station kiosk and erecting a new warehouse in support of the existing business is acceptable. However, the proposed erection of 60 residential units is contrary to the development plan. The site is not allocated for housing in the adopted Midlothian local plan and is not identified for housing in the council's main issue report. The site is not considered to be in a sustainable location, being a considerable distance from local services, schools and public transport. As a consequence, there is a fundamental objection to the principle of residential development on this site. Legislation requires decisions on plan applications to be made in accordance with the development plan unless material considerations indicate otherwise. The presumption against residential development is not outweighed by any other material considerations. There have been 4 representations objecting to the application and 1 supporting the application. There is also an outstanding objection from SEPA. As the proposed development is contrary to the development plan, the recommendation is to refuse planning permission.
Does anybody make any comments? Alex?
Chair, I'm not making any comments at this stage, but I'd just like a couple of questions. Page 45, Peter, 8.6, there's the figures on there about the size of the hectares of the site and how many houses are being built, but there's no reference. Can you make reference to Howgate, which is a bigger site with less houses, but there's no reference made to the numbers? To the size of the houses. I mean, if you're building 5-bedroom house, obviously it's going to be bigger than a 2-bedroom bungalow. and maybe we could look at the numbers again. And then the other point was transport issues, 8.12 on page 46. Now, as far as I'm aware, as being represented by Dalkeith Ward, that site, if it went ahead, would have the same bus service as what Parthhead has at the present moment of time, because that's the route for Dalkeith to the borders, up the old part of the A68, which is up past Ford and up past Woodburn, and up to Parthhead. So it would be exactly the same bus service as Parthhead, and I didn't see that's a reason for rejecting this application.
I have a question regards to the numbers of houses. Has there been any dialogue with the developer with regards to the amount of houses? Was any attempt made to try and seek to maybe bring that number down?
Chairman, just to clarify, in terms of that issue, the application is just in principle at this stage, so it wasn't about, let's say, working through the detail in terms of the parking provision, the landscaping, the garden sizes, all which would impact on the numbers of units. So although the applicant's shown an indicative drawing is 60, because the application is just in principle, we haven't got into that sort of detail. Coming back to the other two points, the issue in paragraph 8.6 about the numbers is just, sometimes we talk about numbers of units on a site being too many or too few, and it's sometimes difficult to actually gauge how big that is. So it was just trying to be a bit, compare some other sort of settlements. I appreciate the house sizes vary hugely, but it was just to try and put that into some sort of context. Hopefully we can clarify the bus route.
The current bus route, the 5152, runs through Whitehill Village, so it doesn't actually pass the site. It turns off, turns right beforehand, goes through Whitehill Village, turns on towards Parthhead, so it doesn't actually go to the frontage of the site. You would have to leave the site and walk back towards Dalkeith and find a bus stop to board the bus. It's not actually passing the site as such.
I didn't understand that, because the road passes Fordal filling station. That's where a lot of people, Dalkeith, go to get petrol, and it's just off the road, and that's where the site is. So they would just need to walk out the scheme, past the garage, and they'd be right on the main road.
The nearest bus stop's inside Whitehill Village. There's no other bus stop in that section. The bus just continues straight on down to Dalkeith. If you create a new bus stop somewhere along that part, you'd still have to walk from the town, from the proposed township to the main road. And then you'd have to get the bus, which is an hourly service, I believe. That's the only bus service available. Or walk into Dalkeith Town Centre and pick up the other services which are available there.
Chair, you would just walk out to the main road and get the put up a new bus stop. I mean, it's simple. It's that simple. And I don't think that's the reason for rejecting this application.
Peter first, then you, Bob.
Why has there never been a visit organised to this?
Chair, just to advise committee, the arrangements are that members can ask for a site visit if they wish to do so, and there's provision for site visits to be made in advance of the committee considering the application. What members have probably realised is that where we have an application which is going to a predetermination hearing, then we always recommend that the committee undertake a site visit, because it's probably an effective and sensible thing to do. But for applications which are coming onto the agenda, then if any member is wanting to have a committee site visit, then we can arrange that. But it's always been very much a question of at the request of members.
As I understand it, there was still a very strong dialogue going on between the applicant and the planners, and that this suddenly has been brought up to the planning committee today, while there was still a great deal to be ironed out. And I feel, in view of that, rather than make a decision today, we should really all of us go and have a look at it and kick the tires and see what's happening and continue the dialogue between the applicant and the council. As I understand it, 60 houses is not cast in stone. So could we move that we at least have a further discussion about this and pay a site visit?
Thank you, Peter. Both Bob wants to speak, then Ewan, but first I want Peter to answer that.
Jim, I think we're at a stage where you have an applicant who's proposing a scheme which is, I was going to say significant, but it's quite a few houses, 60-ish, although we haven't agreed the detail. We need sort of to make a judgment on whether the actual principle's okay. Because the site's not allocated for housing, we have got this situation where the proposal doesn't meet the first test, which is, you know, it's not been allocated for housing. So we haven't got moved into pinning down the exact numbers and the exact detail. I think the council maybe needs to make a judgment first about whether it's happy with the principle of housing on that site before we talk about numbers and layouts.
Peter, what about Peter De Vink? You said it's been rushed. He says it's been rushed to...
Well, Chairman, the applications... we've had the application for a number of months. We've correctly, neighbour notified, correctly consulted, assessed it. It's a question of assessing whether the principle is okay. Obviously, once the committee reports become public, then understandably, applicants and agents see it and want to contact and negotiate and discuss the content of that. And that has been ongoing. And many applications or applicants continue discussions with the planning authority whilst their applications move forward. But we are at a position where we need to make a judgment on the principle before talking with the agent about details of design and layouts.
Bob? I must agree with Peter. This, the whole principle is totally seems to fly in the face of all our planning arrangements in the local plan. We worry about development out into the countryside in Midlothian. Considering this, throws the whole of Midlothian open to anyone. We worry about development in the country being only for agricultural purposes. To just accept what would be virtually another new town, all the educational implications and so on, just seem unacceptable.
Ian? Thank you, Chair. I'd just like to say I endorse entirely what Councillor Constable has just said. You know, the local plan, it says under transportation, will support and promote the development of a sustainable transport network. You know, from what I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, we've got an hourly bus service which runs 600 yards away from the nearest point along a dark path. You know, we're going to have 60 extra vehicles on the road about two or three times a day. That's the kind of thing we're looking at here. We really have to start developing in line with the local plan, and the local plan, we spend a lot of time going through consultation and trying to work out the most sustainable approach. We use the word sustainable a lot, and now we put forward a plan, a proposal here, which flies in the face of that. Now, I agree entirely with what Councillor Constable just said.
The road that we are talking about is a road that's almost like the road to nowhere. It very hardly has any vehicles on it, and if 60 vehicles would go twice a day there, or even 120 vehicles, it would make no impact. That road, since the bypass, has been almost like Mare Celeste, so I don't see whether that's an issue. There has been quite a lot of support from Colesland and Whitehill community councils for this, so I don't see why we should be so hung up about the local development plan.
Russell?
Yeah, I was just going to ask Peter if part of the site that's involved here is the former caravan site. Yeah. And therefore, we have, as a committee, many, many times when a caravan site has ceased to be part, we've looked at alternative uses. In fact, there's one went to appeal when we turned it down not terribly long ago, which is now going to go ahead with housing. And I just wondered if that was a consideration that was taken into being, given you could argue it's a windfall site. And even though I accept wholeheartedly that there is nothing here that supports the local plan, That's on one side of the argument. The other side says that we should look and consider sites that come forward in a landfill, and not on a landfill, in a windfall basis, a landfill. I know. And I just wonder, you know, whether that was taken into consideration, given that the difference in the site has taken place. And part of the rationale, that the reason why there's a different approach to that site now is because the very nature of the A68 bypass. And this council has been in discussion with the applicants for 3 or 4 years, maybe even 5 years, maybe even longer than that, on the basis that the A68 bypass was coming and something was going to have to happen to continue a viable business there. That was always accepted at the time by the council, so it's not new news that was always accepted that. And I just wonder if the former caravan site is the site in question, whether planning officers didn't have an empathy towards finding an alternative use, in other words, to keep that whole area a sustainable area, given that the other nature of the things that go on there within that mixed use.
Chairman, yeah, a number of things. The former caravan or the caravan park is within the site, and I know in my brief introduction and in the report made reference to supporting the other businesses, you know, to help the businesses on the ground. So in terms of the warehouse component and the extension to the kiosk. I'm not sure whether the other site we're referring to is maybe the one at Kevick up in Lasswade, which the issue with that was that it was within the settlement boundaries, so it was a windfall site, but it was within a sustainable location, i.e. within the settlement boundary. This one, of course, is out with Dalkey's settlement boundary and is within the countryside, so that's the difference with these.
Okay. Yeah, I find myself in rather difficult place here, because I 100% agree with what Bob Constable's had to say, in simple planning terms just now, we would just simply dismiss this and say no, and if you grant consent here, we'll just put a big banner up saying look, build wherever you want. But on the other hand, you've also got to take into account the argument that's been made here, that there was a very good viable business working away here until such times as we came in with the Scottish Government and put in a bypass road. And I don't think we can just ignore the fact that this business and this grouping of buildings and that's here. I think the suggestion of a site visit would be helpful, but in real terms, what we'd be able to do with that site visit, I don't know, because in real planning terms, it's hard to see what we could do in this site. It's probably another area where we should have had a look some time ago and looked at bringing in supplementary planning guidance as to what was going to do here, because I think everybody knew with the new bypass coming in, it was going to be very, very hard, if not impossible, for this business to continue in a viable manner. And I didn't think we can just kid on here that there's nothing we're going to do. So I'd be quite happy to ask that we do continue this for a site visit, but I would like to stress that I can't see in any way with the current planning guidelines and planning that we have agreed in here through the local development plan that we could grant consent for this. But I don't think we can just walk away here and say, well, you've not got a viable business and there's nothing we're going to do for you.
Owen.
Yeah, I think that's probably a sensible way forward to, if we continue, because that way we don't tie ourselves to any particular outcome today. Allow ourselves to look at it, but also allow ourselves to maybe have some time to look at what the options are. Yeah. Obviously, there are clear planning policy issues here, but perhaps if we could arrange some format that allows us to have that wider discussion, not necessarily about the specific application, but perhaps in a bit more general terms about how we deal with this sort of situation when it arises, and in the meantime we continue this application, perhaps even suggesting for two cycles to allow the proper consideration of this rather than simply coming back in 6 weeks' time and finding ourselves in the same position again.
Chair, I wonder on that basis, and obviously if the committee agrees that we could arrange a site visit for the members, and also obviously continue the report and to come back to the committee at the next meeting with a supplementary report which touches on some of the issues which some of the members have just raised in terms of the potential of the site for the type of uses which may accord with the development plan.
Agreed on that?
Yep.
I think
I was suggesting perhaps if we actually continue the report itself for two cycles to allow ourselves to have consideration of some of the wider issues in isolation at the next meeting. But if we actually, this consideration of this item maybe goes two meetings down the line, would be perhaps to give the space members will need to consider the issues.
If members are happy with that, that would mean it would come back to the meeting on the 27th of May.
That Russell, will move us into the sixth year we've been talking about this business. Very much indeed.